I'm Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast, inspiring you to take the lead and be a force for change in your industry, your organization, and your own life. It's about being endlessly curious, making a difference, connecting with your purpose and with yourself, and taking the brilliant gamble of releasing the punk underneath your suit. Hello, and welcome to episode 52 of the Punks in Suits podcast. I hope you are very well. I am feeling good. For any of those of you who are worried about the state of my mental health after last week's admission that I was in the belly of the whale, I'm feeling good. I did exactly as I advised all of you guys. I pretty much put a stop on anything that was causing me a sense of overwhelm and actually took a day off one of the days of last week as well to go down to London with Ivy for her to audition for an advert that she was put up for by her agent. So I just took some of the pressure off and actually, of course, had some really productive conversations about new products, new ways that I can support you guys, ways I can support my clients. So as soon as I took the pressure off, of course, my ideas started to flow more freely. One of the brilliant conversations I had is the conversation I'm going to share with you on today's show. Ian Tweedale is a director at Tramshed Tech, which is broadly a co-working facility in Cardiff in Wales, although, as he will describe, it's a lot more as well. Formerly, Ian worked with IBM and the BBC, as well as lots of other organisations, and he's kind of zigzagged his way through a whole range of interesting roles to satisfy what he describes as his curiosity and his desire for fun and his determination to travel the world and have other people pay for it. I met him a couple of months ago when I was giving a speech at Tramshed Tech, and we had a great discussion about the future of work, his own journey, and about the growth of co-working and co-working spaces. So we decided to have another go, and this time to record ourselves. You don't need to be a 21-year-old techie, startup-y guy or gal to be inspired by Ian and get some great ideas, not only about how we work, but also how to make choices about what work to do. So without further ado, here's the interview. Ian, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm brilliant. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good. Tell us where you are, because you've got an interesting background at the moment.
Yeah. Actually, if I turn it around just for a second, I'm sitting in a meeting room full of Lego.
I can see that. Now, our listeners can't see it, but I can see boxes after boxes.
Yeah. So I work for a company called Tramshed Tech, and we also have another company called Big Learning Company. We do a lot of Lego education stuff with schools. As one of the things we do at Big Learning Company, and we're teaching kids to code by making robots and having a great time. It was the best 2 days of my life for a long time, actually, when I started doing this job, when we were looking at how to code with Lego. So it's a bit like, what's it called, Robot Wars, a bit like that. So people race them and fight and do all sorts of cool stuff as well. So it's great fun, yeah. So where I am, it's basically we do a couple of things. We're a co-working space, so we've got about 80 companies and individuals, freelancers working with us. We've got an additional 20 office units with more established companies, and this week we've got big event spaces as well. This week we've got people like Microsoft here, Welsh Water. We've got some big corporate clients and some small companies as well doing stuff, finding out how to do things digitally. So that's what we are.
And I mean, this is exactly why I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, most people still work in kind of conventional, they may not work for a big business. If they do, they probably work primarily from big offices somewhere in a city or an out of town kind of industrial estate type of place. Or they work for a smaller company, but they still have the fixed office.
Yeah.
But obviously, with more remote workers, with people living outside of the big cities and not so much wanting to commute, the growth of these co-working spaces, and of course people running their own businesses and startups and all that, there's been this massive growth. And so when we met, I was actually at Tramshed, wasn't I, giving a speech to some people up there. And I was so impressed by the layout of the place, the facilities, the smell, which was completely delicious.
I hope that was coffee.
It was coffee and something chocolatey. It was delicious. And I wanted to talk to you because I think, you know, a lot of people don't even realize that it is possible to work in that environment. So we'll come to all that. But let's backtrack a bit into a bit about you. Have you always been kind of, you know, edgy, codey, Lego-y kind of co-worky type person?
Well, I've always been quite interested in the sort of digital technology stuff in my working life. I suppose, actually, before that, I was very much involved in sort of helping businesses set up. I've done things all over the world, really, with different types of businesses. A lot in broadcasting, communications, and so on. But really, in the last sort of 25 years, it's all been around technology and sort of the creative industries. And so I think that what I've seen really is a whole new sort of phase. It's coming back to that question about, you know, how people work together. Last time round in the dot-com bubble, it was a very different environment. It was everyone sort of, I'm here to make my millions and keep away. Now it's very much more collaborative. And I think I've got a few grey hairs. I've been around the block a couple of times, but the sort of millennials coming through now, they're a very different breed. And I love working with young people because they're so positive and enthusiastic and authentic. You know, they really believe in the thing they're doing. And I love that. So refreshing compared with the sort of, you know, being in a big company that sort of just grinds you down over the years, really. It's lovely to be with those people. And it's so much more collaborative. And that's the sort of environment I'm in now. So I think it's been a bit of a, it's quite different worlds, but actually with the sort of technology and creative industries thread throughout, really.
So my understanding is that you, before you set up Tramshed, you were in quite a different environment, like a more stable corporate. What was it that, and even though you've had this quite varied career, that was the step before this, what was it that made you think, actually, now's the time for me to make quite a dramatic change in my career and in my life?
I wanted fun. So I used to work for the BBC for quite a few years actually, and although it was a very, you know, creative environment, I was in a particular sort of management role, if you like, that was you know, reasonably senior, but actually I felt I was just in the corporate machine and sort of doing all the stuff and dealing with people who didn't want to do things particularly, and trying to sort of motivate people, constantly finding efficiency savings and dealing with cuts and redundancies. And it just grinds you down after a little while, actually. The pros of that sort of world are that, you know, it's quite stable. It's reasonably well paid. You know, no one got sacked for choosing the BBC. I used to work for IBM as well. No one got sacked for buying IBM before. So big corporate environments, I know a little bit about, but you know, they're great. But actually, if you find you're waking up in the morning, you think, I don't really want to do it, it's time to do something different.
Was it an easy decision that? So I get that you were looking for fun, but I mean, like you say, you were giving up the security, the credibility of working with an organization like the BBC. This is something that I'm familiar with, you know, people saying, well, why would you want to leave the BBC? Surely that's amazing. To do something that, frankly, you know, it could have gone really badly. You've invested a lot of money into Tramshed. Was there a moment that you thought, actually, this is craziness?
I think you have sort of questions every day, really, about, you know, oh, it's very different. But actually, I've been so sort of stimulated by the people and the vision and what we're trying to do. It's worth every moment, actually. So, no, I haven't had doubts about it. I think as well, people think you don't have choices when you're in a big organisation and that, you know, you're sort of trapped into it and the pension schemes and everything else. But, you know, I think that if you sort of go with some good people who you trust and you work well with, and you know, it's not always fun, clearly. It's really hard and it's very long hours and it's very all-consuming. It's 7 days a week and it's all that sort of stuff. You couldn't do that possibly without really wanting to do it, but I do still want to do it. And I get up in the morning, I think, yeah, that's great. Let's get on with it. And this is exciting. So I think it's about making choices and sort of, it depends where you are in life and what you want from life, really. And I just wanted to change and to do something that was more directly where I had responsibility for things as well, because I was part of a big organization. Yeah, you can do things within your own bit of that organisation, but a lot of the time, it's, you know, public sector body, the BBC, it operates as a lot of public sector bodies do, where it's about priorities, and senior priorities change depending on, you know, a whole bunch of factors from all sorts of different organisational and different environmental factors in terms of the environment you're in, and you can be doing a really good job. And the priorities change, and actually the people who are doing a really good job suddenly end up losing their jobs or being sort of merged into other bits and things like that. In the private sector, you know how you're doing. If you're making money, you make more money. If you're not making money, you go out of business. It's quite simple. And I think it is simpler in the private sector. It's more brutal in some respects, but it is simpler. So I think I'd come from the private sector before, so I knew that perfectly well, but it's a case of there is a brutal simplicity, and I think that I actually wanted that simplicity again after having the machinations of big public sector bodies, where sometimes it's rather odd, the decision making that happens.
Yeah, it's so interesting this, because of course this is the conversation that I'm often having with my clients who are, you know, senior in their careers. I mean, we're not talking about people who are in their 20s and thinking, oh, you know, I want to just have a few years traveling the world or whatever. We're talking about people who have done a huge amount in their careers, but have this slightly itchy feet feeling, or maybe not slight, maybe quite significant, that they do the work they do because they want to make a difference. They want to have an impact. They want to see that how they're spending their time every day is actually getting some sort of result out there in the world. And in a big company, it can sometimes be difficult to make that connection. You know, you can, in a way, you can have more influence because you're a big organization with, you know, if something does work well, it can work well nationally or internationally, and that can be amazing. But day to day, it can be really hard to see how you're making a difference. Was that part of the thinking around this? Because, of course, with something like an organization like Tramshed, with any organization that lives or dies by how successful you are, how well you do your job, you're right there at the edge. You know, it's rubber hits the road time. Was that very appealing to you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you can see a very direct impact of the work you do very quickly in this sort of context. Just to put it in context, there's about 150 people work at the Tramshed, and they're range of companies, freelancers, small companies, some medium-sized companies. There's actually only 8 of us who work in this business. So, and, you know, when you come in, as you did before, you go in and there's a wow factor. It looks really great. I mean, the design is really nice. There's a lot of people, a lot of bustle and activity. You think it's quite a big operation. Actually, it's not. It's a really small business, and we've got all the usual cash flow and sort of staffing issues that you have in a small business. And but I think you can equally, so at a very small level like that, see the direct impact of what you do on a daily basis, and that's great. What you don't have is the infrastructure and the resources to support you like big organizations have. So, you know, if you spot something that needs doing, you do it. I was painting walls the other week, and then it's about, you know, trying to raise finance for you know, with investors and banks and so on. So it's very different. It's a bit of everything, and that's quite stimulating. It's great, actually. But if you're used to having, you know, the other people do the stuff, there aren't the other people. It's you, and it's your immediate sort of co-workers, really. So, but that does mean it gives you a real buzz when you get it done. You can have a direct impact on things. So, but it's, you don't have that safety net financially, and you don't have that safety net organizationally to sort of let other people cover those things. But you know, there's pros and cons for each. And, you know, I wish I had that infrastructure in place that I had in the previous place. You just don't have it. You just get on with it. So, but it's exciting as a result of that. It's a roller coaster, but it's exciting.
That's important, isn't it? Because when you're trapped or you feel trapped in corporate land, the alternative can look really appealing. And I think that some people look at my life or look at your life and think, oh, so much freedom. Actually, there is a lot of freedom, but there's also a kind of, there's no safety net, really. So whereas there is in corporate, you know, I mean, of course, they can decide that you're surplus to requirements, but most of the time they don't. You know, most of the time you're pretty secure. So you are swapping that security and the infrastructure and that idea. I thought this was really important what you said, having people to go and do stuff for you. You could spend a whole day. I mean, I was trying to figure out something this morning to do with my newsletter list. There wasn't anyone else to ask. I just had to sit there for an hour and a half and try to figure it out because there's no IT department, you know.
Yeah, it would be 3 hours for me, so you did well.
Yeah. No, it wasn't too bad. But so, okay, so that's really good. So you made this decision to come over and to work on Tramshed. Tell me a bit about the journey. Where was it when you first stepped in and where is it? Well, you said a bit about where it is now, but I'm really interested in that journey.
Yeah, well, the co-founders are Mark and Louise. It was their vision, and that was the vision I really bought into. I really got it. So what they were trying to do was they were looking for a place of a physical space to put Big Learning Company, which is the other company that we've got here. And there wasn't anywhere like it, actually. So they thought, let's just do it and set up a place like this. And then on the back of getting a couple of key tenants in, they managed to, you know, secure the whole place and get moving with it. They did the design, everything. They did the whole thing from scratch. It was a big... it was, as the word says, it was a place where the trams used to live in Cardiff. It was a bus depot for a while, engineering depot for buses. It was derelict for a little while, and when they came in, it was full of water and pigeons and oil drums and things like that. So now it's full of co-workers and really nice. We've kept the brickwork, and it's all still looks quite industrial, and it's got a really nice non-corporate feel to it. So it's interesting because a lot of people who come in think we've been here a long time. Actually, we only just had our first birthday in September. So actually from opening the doors and getting people through, we're pretty much full now in terms of the office spaces. We've opened some more spaces up. And essentially, we've other bits have just come along that we weren't quite anticipating. So our event space has really grown massively. So we've got, you know, last week we had 3 events on at the same time, and we just about managed to cope. But, you know, there's a real need for people to sort of have spaces where they can, discuss what's going on in creative industries and technology, places where they can find people who can help them do stuff, places they can meet people who can give them new ideas and things like that. So it's those sorts of things that have been going on. And it's really flown in terms of it just being a magnet hub, if you like, for people in this sector. So it's gone from being very much a property-based thing to being a property thing still, certainly. And that's where the core bread and butter and money comes from. But it's also become a place, an ideas hub, if you like, and a production hub for the creative industries as well. So we've got TV companies that are working with digital marketing companies that are working with streaming businesses and stuff like that. So we're seeing whole new types of ways of doing things and technologists mixing with television companies and sort of, you know, hardcore software engineers meeting people who know things about Bitcoin and stuff like that. So it's this sort of whirling mass of ideas, potential, technology, people. And yeah, it's great, actually. So, and with a bit of entertainment thrown in, so we've got a music venue at the other end, which is another company, but we work really closely with them. And importantly, we've got a couple of bars here as well, so that really helps too. So people adjourn to the bar in the evening after a long day's networking.
It sounds absolutely perfect. Chocolate smells in the daytime and beer smells in the evening. I tell me then a bit more about the people who are co-working there. So I'm imagining, I saw the backs of some of their heads when I was there. They seemed young. Is it typically your millennials?
There are a lot of millennials, and they've come out of the back bedrooms and they wanted to be in a place where they could sort of share time and space and offices and things like that. But there's also quite a few people who are a lot more experienced at running businesses as well. And I think that's what you really need too. So the millennials might have fantastic ideas and great skills, but they might not be that hot on having run businesses before. So we can hook some of the grey beards with the millennials. And that's actually really effective. And it's a place where you do get that mix, which is good. It's also a place like we've got John Wood from Innovate UK here. So there are people who are coming here. They're being attracted here by who's here. And so Innovate UK want to get projects out on technology and R&D and so on. They work with people in the building. They've set up their own office here as well, which is great. Then you've got investors who are now beginning to come and find out where those growth companies might be. So you've got banks. We've got actually a Development Bank for Wales pitching event on Wednesday, I think it is. Yeah, Wednesday. It used to be called Xenos Forum, angel investors, basically. So they're seeing, it's interesting, when you talk to investors, there's actually lots of money out there. The problem is, there's how you get, if you say there's 100 companies, there might be five that are really going to go somewhere. How do you actually find the five out of the 100? And that's partly where we come in the sense that we can help them to identify the real sort of the growth companies, the businesses that are going to go somewhere. And so we're finding that, you know, those third parties like investors, like government technology agencies and people like that are coming here as well. So you've got millennials, you've got some more established companies and some, you know, people here who are quite experienced. You've got investors coming in. You've got other people who want to sort of connect up with those companies too. And it's, I guess what we're trying to do is to create a growth platform. And it's like, it's both a growth platform and also a sort of a place that people can sort of really sort of speed things up. And so that's what's attracting people from different groups. I'd also say there's a lot of women here in terms of technology has been, you know, considered more of a male domain in the past. It really isn't. And you know, there's a lot of people who are setting up businesses and a lot of people who are really sort of, we have, say, women in technology sessions here quite regularly. We've got all sorts of events going on that are organized by women in technology. So it's a younger demographic. It's a more diverse demographic. And it's sort of having an effect in terms of creating an ecosystem for growth.
Yeah, I think that's so I wasn't expecting you to say all that because, you know, I suppose I had the idea that fundamentally it was a desk for rent, you know. And actually what you're describing, this ecosystem idea is it's a great way to put it, that, you know, you could be based in your bedroom or your home office, and that would be very nice. You could feed the cat and, you know, take a little wander out in your garden at lunchtime or whatever. But actually the benefits of being in that kind of environment are more than just your desk. It's the whole network and that ability that you have to connect people up, or that they create amongst themselves to connect up, that you don't have when you just are a worker at home.
Mm, yeah. It's that almost serendipity in a way. We've manufactured it in the sense that you do bump into people. We've designed the place very deliberately, the open co-working space, so that you will have to walk past people. You have to walk past the table where all the techies are. You might listen to what they're saying. You think, oh, are you making a coffee there? And actually, we've done it deliberately. Then there's other spaces where a bit quieter. We're trying to manufacture those connections. They will happen anyway, but the way we've designed it is quite appropriate to that. And then you've got a suite of 20 office units that are more established companies. And some of them actually, although they've got an office here, they still sit in the co-working space because they want that buzz. And they want to be able to riff off each other during the day and say, does anyone know how to do this? Or anyone got a contact over here? And things like that. But they then might sort of retreat to their office if they've got to get their head down and do some stuff. But it's that sort of attempt to, it's not just, I mean, there are a lot of co-working spaces around the place. We've been quite specific in that we really only have people here who are involved in either the creative industries and or technology. So technology sort of goes across the top of the whole thing. But then there are also some technology-based creative industries companies. But then there are some quite traditional creative industries companies, like the regular TV companies, who now are beginning to learn how to do digital marketing and sell their programs in other countries and sell in turn turn out content which is multiple format by using short-form video stuff. That they're learning how to do that from some of the other guys here who are really hot on that sort of stuff. So it's they're all in those sectors, and therefore there's going to be a sort of a creative interplay between people that enables them to develop their own businesses further and then come up with new business ideas and new market opportunities and stuff. So it's sectorally specific, and that's quite important, I think, in this context.
I was reading an article this weekend about people buying houses outside of the big cities because they're really only needed to be in the office 1 or 2 days. And so they don't have to commute every single day. Are you finding that, and the estate agents who were sort of being quoted in this article were saying, and therefore they want homes with, you know, offices and good Wi-Fi and all of that. Are you finding any of those guys are coming to work in co-working, or are they properly remote workers based at home who haven't quite capitalized on? Because if we can imagine, you know, people from the big businesses who don't have to go into the corporate head office in London or Birmingham or whatever, actually coming and working in a place like Tramshed, then you can bring some of this diversity of thinking and different ways of working straight into corporate.
Yeah, it's really interesting that. So I think we are seeing people who are really set up at home for everything, but they still like to come to the odd meeting where they're meeting other people face to face. And that's happening anyway. And also just where the creative opportunities and the business opportunities for just bumping into people, you can't get that from home. So, I mean, I think also, you know, people just like human contact and, you know, we're social animals at the end of the day, but, you know, you can do a lot of remote stuff, certainly. And I think you could base yourself at home quite easily and then just pop in. And we do see that where we've got people coming in, you know, once a month or something like that to hold our group sessions and things. The other thing we're seeing, like you mentioned about the, you know, the wider corporate environment, we're seeing some larger organisations want to be in spaces like this for their sort of strategy sessions or away days, where it just feels more of a creative space. And I think we're seeing a lot of that, actually, where a lot of the bookings and the events, we have sort of, we're not just the venue, but we have sort of trained facilitators who will facilitate corporate away days and stuff like that. We're doing one later this week, actually, where before we were on the call now, we were just working out how to actually do that. So that was around how we're using a whole bunch of different technologies like Google Trends and sort of social media search to help with digital marketing campaigns. And so we're helping that team to really sort of do that. So, but they're coming here because they just want to, you know, undo the tie a bit and sort of let your hair down and actually sort of be in a more creative environment. So So I think there's a lot of bigger corporate organisations that are coming to places like this as well to do stuff, because it just enables them to get away from the environments where you've got, you know, I saw it when I was at the Beeb, saw it at IBM. You know, you've got certain tribes in organisations that do things in a particular way, and it's nice to sort of get them out of that environment every so often and just sort of mix a bit more and sort of do things in a slightly different way. So I think we are seeing a lot of that, and we've opened up a couple of new spaces in the place to enable us to do that, an innovation studio and a big breakout space area, which is away from the co-working space, but we're using it primarily for those sorts of innovation and sort of development sessions.
Yeah, amazing. And so I don't remember whether we talked about this when we met, but my listeners will know that next year in the spring, my daughter and I are kind of hitting the road, and I'm going to become a digital nomad, and we're going off. And some of the time we'll be staying in Airbnbs around the UK and around Europe, and we'll have Wi-Fi and we'll have, you know, space for me to set up a little office. Some of the time we're going to be in our camper van. It's quite difficult to work properly in a camper van. So I'm going to be looking for places like Tramshed that I can base myself just for a day or two or a month if we're going to be in a location a bit longer. What are some of the things that I should expect at the very basic level? And then what are some of the things that would heighten my experience in a way that maybe I couldn't anticipate?
If you were, I mean, there's basic sort of, you know, factors like good bandwidth and all the rest of it. So you can do, you know, streaming and all the rest of that, all that sort of stuff. So you can get onto, you know, and so you can use Zoom or whatever it is, Skype or whatever. So, you know, there's basic stuff like that. But I think, you know, if you're landing in a particular place for a short period, it's really great to have a space where there are going to be like-minded people that you might want to sort of find out what's going on in that place and find out what the things are. So, I mean, for example, we held a Bitcoin event here last week, and it's grown from about 5 people a month to about 40 people a month in the last 2 or 3 months. And that's purely because people want to know what's happening and what's going on. And they know there'll be people there who can tell them and say, so we have people who are Bitcoin miners, we have people who are Bitcoin traders, we have people who are doing development of the technology platforms that use Bitcoin and blockchain and so on. So I think places that, you know, if you were there for a couple of days, you could find someone who's interesting and have a chat with and find out what's going on. And I think those sorts of places, you know, that's what I'd do if I was doing what you were doing. So it's not offices. It's not just having a meeting room. It's about places with people in and places where things are going on.
Yeah, fantastic. And what about, I don't think you have this yet, but I certainly have been looking around that increasingly, you mentioned women in tech, not that this particular point should only appeal to women, but co-working spaces with childcare. Is that something that you're starting to hear about and notice going on?
It's really interesting. We are, and we don't have direct childcare facilities here, and it might be something that we could think about actually. So, so yeah, that's a really good idea, and I think that, you know, that would be something that, you know, I'd really like us to look at. So, but yeah, it could well be that is a factor actually. So,
What are some of the other trends that you are seeing, and some of the things that you're thinking about in terms of the future of Tramshed?
Investment. So in other words, for us to have an investment fund here ourselves that we run ourselves, so that, you know, if we're taking equity in developing companies, that's something that we'd like to do. We'd like to do more tramsheds so that we can do more of them in other places. So that's something that we are currently talking to quite a few people about as to how we roll these out into different cities and maybe in different countries as well. Also, another big area is content. So we've got I came on board partly from my sort of BBC background, where I was running online services for BBC before this, with a real ambition to to set up a content business, a new type of media company, actually, that's not delivered content through broadcast, but it's actually delivering it through digital platforms, through social media, and through things like streaming, and through new types of entrants into different markets. So one of the things I've done in the past has been to help people who are not traditionally considering themselves content businesses to become content businesses. So there may well be things to do with trains, there may be things to do with cars that are going to be quite interesting over the next few years, I think, where you're seeing new entrants into the media space that just weren't there a few years ago. So products and brands becoming very much content producers, and I was working with them to help them find their audiences or their customers in different places. So investment, more tramsheds, media, content. So those are probably the areas we're looking at.
Plenty of places to go with the business.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. So so it's an exciting thing. I mean, we've got some really great ideas, and the strategy is very great. It's about getting from 8 people and all the usual cash flow issues around a small business into scaling it, really, and that's what we're trying to do next. And that's no mean feat, actually. I know that's going to be really tough over the next few years, but hopefully we'll get there.
I'm sure you will. So if we go back to change is such a big theme for most of the listeners to this show and for most of us. I mean, life is constantly changing. Our businesses are constantly changing. I know you've been through lots of change, driven lots of change and been through lots of change yourself. This is quite a difficult question to pounce on you, but what have you learned? It can be one thing or more than one thing, that the more change you do, the more comfortable you're able to be around change. What have you learned?
It's funny, it sounds like a bit hackneyed, doesn't it? But change is good. I love change. I've always wanted to embrace it. And actually, you know, at considerable cost in some ways. I mean, you don't get rich on it. Necessarily, you don't actually benefit your long-term career in a major way, but I'm just curious and I want to learn new things. I want to do new things, and I'm curious for change. I mean, in a previous stage in my life, my job was what I wanted was basically to travel the world to see interesting places and get someone else to pay for it. So, you know, when I used to work for IBM and I wanted to go to, well, before that, actually, I had another company that was in Russia. And I just wanted to see, when the wall came down, I thought, that looks like an interesting place to be. So I managed to manufacture a way to get out to Moscow with a case and sort of set a business up out there, because I was always curious and interested in societies and how economics was changing, stuff like that. Then I thought when apartheid ended, it would be great to find out all of that sort of stuff and what was going on. So I managed to manufacture a job out in South Africa. So I've always been quite interested in, my background is in social anthropology. So I've always been very interested in societies and how they change. And, you know, Eastern Europe, when all that the communism came down and, you know, apartheid and those sorts of places. And then I wanted to find out about America and how that all works. I managed to get a job out of that. You know, it's never been a career plan to sort of necessarily make a shed load of money. It's always been to address some of the curiosities that I had about places and people. So I don't think that you necessarily make money out of that sort of stuff. If that's your primary goal, then do something else. And you know, but I think change in that sense, do it on your own terms. And I think, you know, if you've got a particular way of thinking and you know, you can go out and do it. I mean, I think the other thing that really I would say is that you always have a choice in everything that's around you. And you might not think you have, and I came across a lot of people who've been in an organisation for a long time who thought they were trapped and didn't have choices. Everyone has a choice in every situation, and it's just that you don't necessarily want to make that choice because of what you think you're going to lose. But actually, the choices I've made have not been, have led to strange and weird and wonderful things happening, but they've always been really interesting and have led to sort of fascinating things. But it's been quite tough. I don't think embracing change does not necessarily pay and doesn't necessarily lead to a quiet life and a stable life. But, you have choices. So that would be my only other thing from my own somewhat hackneyed experience.
That I love that, and that, what I hear is something that I've been learning over the years, and particularly recently, is that the attachment in particular to money and to ever increasing amounts of money that you think are going to provide you with security, that's a trap, really. And whilst I would never encourage anybody to take big financial risks and, you know, risk losing everything unless it was really, you know, their choice that they were taking ownership, I would never encourage people to do that. But I think letting go of some of that very tight attachment to, I must always be increasing the size of my house and size of my mortgage. I must always be getting a better car every year. I must, by this point in my career, surely I should be wearing designer clothes and you know, nice jewelry and buying the expensive makeup and having my hair done somewhere fancy.
Peacocks.
Yeah. Peacocks, exactly. I'm really loving Lidl at the moment. I absolutely love shopping at Lidl. And there's a Lidl in our town, and then right across the road there's a Waitrose. And sometimes the things that we want, they don't have at Lidl, they only have at Waitrose. So when I'm in Lidl, I always say to my daughter, we have to go to the other place after this. I would never say Waitrose while I was in Lidl. But anyway, that's by the by. But this sort of attachment to, well, we do all our shopping in Waitrose, you know. Actually, it's okay. We do most of our shopping in Lidl. I've just sold my Audi and bought the 30-year-old VW camper van. It's not exactly glamorous, but it's far more suitable for the journey that we're about to take than a, you know, convertible Audi. So I think if you can let go of some of that attachment to where you should be, in inverted commas, and instead pursue, in your case, your values around curiosity and travel and fun, then, you know, the world is going to be, it's going to be a pretty exciting life, even if at times it's going to be tough, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it depends what you want in life, really. I mean, and I wouldn't knock anyone who said, actually, what I really want is a really great job with a lot of money and a nice car and a big house. I mean, that's great. I'd love those things as well. But I wouldn't be miserable in work to feed that. I think that's the sort of wrong way around. And I think if you're miserable in work and you feel trapped, but you've got money and those other things, that can be quite hollow quite quickly, I think. So it's a matter of what, knowing yourself, really, knowing what motivates you. And if it's those money things, then do the money stuff. I mean, that's absolutely the case. But if it's not, I think regardless of how much money you earn, I mean, it's interesting. When I worked for IBM, I earned quite a lot of money at IBM. And I was in the consulting arm of IBM, and there was lots of bonuses and lots of stuff. I was earning more money than I earned anywhere else. I was really miserable at the end of it because I was traveling all the time and not seeing my young family. So actually I took a job at less than half the money, but could be there for my kids when they were growing up. And that to me was the key thing then, not so much, you know, the sort of the money. And we were finding that we were spending our money on making time to be together as a family, when actually what I really wanted to be was with my family. So you just think in such a weird way, really. It's the thing of, I can't give that money up. But of course you can. It's a matter of what's important to you. And that probably changes over time. I mean, another factor about me now is I'm 55, so I'm not in the first flush of youth. So I've got a bit more flexibility with family now. My kids are growing up to do what I want to do. And that's, again, the money isn't the key factor at this point. It's about sort of having, you know, a bit more fun and enjoying the things I'm doing and having challenging things, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So, I mean, it's just about, it can change over time. I think that's what I'm trying to say. And don't feel as though it's just one one answer for all time. It certainly isn't. I mean, you know, what you're doing now and what you're planning to do sounds great for you right now. It's wonderful. Yeah. It might be different in, you know, 5 years' time. I don't know. But,
For sure. And I certainly wouldn't have done it, you know, well, I didn't do it. So I wouldn't have done it 5, 10 years ago. It had no interest for me, that. So, and is this something, you said it does change over time, and of course it does for each individual. Are you noticing the millennials that are working in your environment, do they see work differently? I know it's hard to make generalizations, but do they see work differently than maybe we did when we were their age?
I think so. I think there's one good thing and one bad thing. The really good thing is that I think they're much more authentic than I ever was at that age. In the sense of if the thing that, you know, they're being asked to do or the thing that they're doing really has to chime with the values that they've got. And I think that's something I didn't have the nerve to do when I was that age. And I think people are a lot more confident and know what they want now. And I think that's great. And I love that because, you know, with that, you can do so much and give people the right skills and the right contacts, and it will just go whoosh, you know, it's great. The bad thing that I've seen with a few millennials, I have to say, is that some people expect it all on a plate and aren't necessarily prepared to put their backs into things that aren't quite right at the right time. You know, I can remember, you know, really working pretty damned hard at the beginning to sort of get on and just do stuff. And I think there's a sort of slight entitlement view with some people, not all, but I think that, you know, that's one good and one bad. I much prefer the good one. And I think that's where the core is. And that's why I love working with the youngsters coming through. So, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how, just as you and I have evolved what's important to us over our 30 years or more of working, how it evolves for them. Really fascinating, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they're in a great position. It's tough because, you know, of all the, you know, house prices and all those other things. I think it's really tough being young right now, but I think, you know, people are going for the dreams and we want to help them achieve that in places like this. And you know, I think that some of them really are, they're going for it, they're going to do great.
Brilliant. Well, Ian, it's been fantastic to talk to you today. It's been such a lovely, wide-ranging conversation. Yeah, just like I imagine most of the conversations that are happening over there.
Yeah, they are quite often, yeah. So, yeah. So when we're not chasing invoices.
Yeah, you still have to do that, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. So that's good. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, and enjoy the campervan trips.
I hope you enjoyed that. You can find out more about Tramshed Tech at tramshedtech.co.uk. If you're looking for a desk, I found a really useful website. I have to say I haven't used it yet, but it looks extremely cool. And it's called desksnear.me. desksnear.me, where you can find a desk and list a desk. So if you've got spare desks, spare chairs, spare areas in your office, you can rent your desk out to people who don't work for your organisation and maybe create something like the buzz that Ian was talking about in our little chat. If I use any of these co-working spaces as I'm travelling around next year, I will of course share with you what I'm learning about how to make the best of it, what it's like as a properly remote worker, so not just a worker working from a lovely set-up home office as I have at the moment and as maybe many of you do, but actually really working in a kind of digital nomadic way, jumping from office to office, co-working space to co-working space. If I have experiences that I think you will find interesting, or if I meet fascinating people, which is kind of part of my intention, I will definitely pass all of that on to you. In the meantime, please do stay in touch as ever. You can sign up to the newsletter by going to thatpeoplething.com, and there'll be a pop-up that pops up and you can just add your information to that. Very easy, and start getting the emails as well as the free 5-part series that I have written for everyone who signs up. So that is exclusive to anyone who signs up to the newsletter. That 5-part article series isn't available anywhere else. So please do go and sign up. And with other ways to stay in touch with us and to share your own stories, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
You can follow our travel adventures on Instagram as A Brilliant Gamble and on our Facebook group, also called A Brilliant Gamble. Please join and share your travel stories and other brilliant gambles you've made or you want to make. Plus, for tips, tools, inspiration and resources about leadership and change, you can follow Mummy on Twitter at Blair Palmer and on this podcast's Facebook page, Punks and Suits. And finally, to find out how to work with Mummy as a coach or have her speak about leadership and change at your next event, visit the website at www.thatpeoplething.com. Thank you, hug.